Good afternoon and welcome to this afternoon's session on delivering KPIs with Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. My name is Peter Myers. I'm an external speaker, i.e. non-Microsoft, and it's my privilege to be here to present to you on one of my favorite topics in Microsoft BI, and that is analysis services, and specifically how you can use this versatile product to deliver performance management. So the focus is on key performance indicators, but there's a lot more than what you would think from this title, and we'll discuss why as we start to work through this presentation. That's me on a good day. I don't have Twitter. That was what that all represents, so I've got rid of the bird. I'm not sure why. I haven't adapted to that technology. I'm making my way there, but if you do need to contact me, of course I'm here all week. I'll be working at the exhibition hall. My email address is here. I come to you as a fully certified IT professional in SQL Server, focusing on BI. Also an MCT, and for the last 6 years, I've been awarded the Microsoft Most Valued Professional status. So what we're here to talk about in this presentation is KPIs and how we can deliver them using analysis services. We're going to start by defining what a KPI is, and for some of you, I appreciate this might already be known, but let's make it clear to everyone and have a level playing field. What is required data-wise to deliver a KPI is discussed next, and then we can introduce analysis services and the components that can be used to produce solutions for KPIs. We'll look at defining the KPIs, and then finally, how can we report using other products like Excel reporting services and performance point services? All right, so KPI stands for the key performance indicator. And essentially, it's a quantifiable measurement that allows you to compare an actual to a target. So it's one thing to know that that's what we sold, or that's the number of units we produced, but is that according to expectation? So what we require is not just what actually happened, but what we wanted or planned to happen as well. Then we can bring them together and make some assessment to understand whether we're meeting our objectives and goals. So typically, these objects are aligned to corporate strategy and objectives. I'll just give you a quick story. When I get invited to work at a customer's site and they say, we need KPIs, could you help us define them? I instantly say no. You know, my job is to help produce data solutions, but it's certainly not to tell you what your business is about and how you should measure that. I will assist you and guide you in what's required to produce and define the KPI, but really for it to be taken seriously, my experience shows it needs to be supported from the top levels of the organization. Therefore, it needs to be defined by them and then enforced by them. My job is typically to locate the data and produce data objects that allow you to query and report from those KPIs. So just take that as a word of caution from my experience. It is tempting to go out there and think this is how we should manage performance, but it's typically not the IT professional role to do that. Be aware also that KPIs can heavily influence behavior. A good example, sales KPI, whereby each of the salespeople need to achieve a certain quota. It sounds fairly benign. In fact, it sounds like a great idea. But be aware of the fact that when you give that type of target to a salesperson, and if they're struggling to meet that goal, what they're likely to do is start discounting. It introduces this undesirable behavior. So just be aware that KPIs will drive behavior, and you must be very careful about what behavior you expect. In fact, the solution to that one is perhaps a second KPI, one that ensures that targets are met in terms of dollars or units, and another that ensures that profitability margins are maintained, and then measure both of those simultaneously. Here's an idea. We could report by salesperson what sales have been achieved, but that's not really telling us much about performance. It's not until we introduce the goal whereby we can say, okay, well, that's what you expected, or we expected you to sell. Now, to make it easy to understand, especially at a glance, we can introduce a status. Green is good, red is bad, and yellow is somewhere in between. It's bad, but not critical. A fourth metric that you may choose to define is also trend. And trend allows you to see, as a comparison to the previous time period, are things getting better or worse? So at a glance here, we can see that Rachel Valdez-Smythe, not only is she off track, but she's getting worse. Okay, and the star performer here would, of course, be Lynn Soflius, who's exceeding expectation and getting better over time. So this appreciation that we can monitor understand what performance is, and at a glance with these status and trend indicators, get a quick idea about what's happening. So a discussion next about the data that's required to drive these key performance indicators. At minimum, you are going to require an actual and a target. And ideally, corporate data systems will deliver both values. However, you might find we don't have those plans anywhere. It's not common that you don't have the actuals. We have operational systems that are collecting sales and orders and HR hours and so on. So the targets can typically provide a challenge for you in how we're going to obtain them, or we may need to create data structures to store and maintain those values for reporting purposes. Okay, you have some options here. So the absence of formal planning systems may involve the need for you to maintain target values in supplementary data stores, or, not preferably, to define your KPIs with fixed target values. Of course, anything that's fixed is static. It's likely to want to change sometime in the future, and that's going to introduce a whole series of problems. So at this point, I'd like to introduce analysis services and what it can do for us to help us define and maintain the data to support our key performance indicators. There are essentially two components for this product. So since 2012, that is SQL Server 2012, we now refer to it as the data modeling or the BI semantic model component. We have the choice now as IT professionals to produce data models that are either multidimensional, i.e. our cubes, or the new approach supported in SQL Server 2012, which is the tabular project, or indeed Power Pivot. What you'll learn in this session is that KPIs can be defined as first-class objects in either data model. These data models deliver intuitive browsing and high performance, even over extremely large volumes of data. They can perform calculations that are difficult to achieve in relational queries, and they support BI. Inherent within your definition is the KPI itself. What I like about this is that we often strive towards this single version of the truth. In terms of data, we don't want duplicate data around the place, but also in terms of definitions like KPIs. Let's define them once, and let's reuse them consistently across a different range of reporting experiences. Now, the second component that ships with analysis services is the data mining. And so data mining is about discovering patterns in your data. Those patterns can be useful simply to gain deeper insight as to what your data has to tell you. And in particular, where you trust those patterns, you can use those for prediction purposes. And we're going to see how the data mining component can assist us in preparing the planning values for our KPIs in this session. So the demonstration here is going to introduce you to my fictitious company, which is the Frosty Ice Cream Company. And before we here, I have an Excel workbook. It's a pivot chart that is connecting to an existing cube, and this cube is pretty straightforward. All it's capturing is sales, cost of goods, and therefore we can calculate gross profit and the percentage. It's reasonably straightforward in that we have a date dimension and a product dimension. And I do appreciate in the real world that you're likely to have data that's far more complex, but the challenge for me in a 75-minute session is to convey a lot of information, and so I've kept the data model pretty straightforward and simple. So what we see here is that the company sells four different flavors of ice cream, namely vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, and of course the favorite, double chocolate. And what we can see here for the fiscal year that I'm presently filtering on, which is fiscal year 2009, the sales broken down by month. Of course, we see in the warmer months, sales go up, and in the cooler months of winter, sales are lower. That's somewhat understandable. And with the current cube that I have, I can then switch across and say, well, what happened in fiscal year 2010? What happened in fiscal year 2011? That's not performance monitoring, though. That's just fact about what we sold. And the fact is that when I switch across to my project, we'll see that the cube just consists of one fact table for sales, dimensioned by time and product, and there's the two measures. So the first thing that I'm going to do is switch across to Management Studio, and I have a script here that is going to go ahead and extend the definition of my data warehouse to include a new fact table to store the sales budget. And then I can switch back to the project and introduce that into the data source view. And now we have the ability in the data warehouse to store the budget information and represent this in our data model. So I'll rename this table as targets, save that off, switch across to the cube, and then introduce that single measure of sales budget into the cube definition. And there's the measure. I'm going to format it. On the calculations tab, I'm going to extend the definition of this with a calculation copied from my snippets. So a couple of calculations here that will allow me to compute sales variance and variance percent. So I simply copy these and paste them in. And now that I've deployed that, I now have a cube that allows us to store actuals and targets. This is the basic groundwork. Now, you'll recall that there are four products: vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, and double chocolate. So we're going to explore different ways in methods for capturing the planning values. The first way, and perhaps the most undesirable, so I'm doing this for vanilla, is that what we can do by using a scoped assignment is simply say that next year's planning values are equal to what the current year's actuals were. And a scoped assignment allows me to scope out that portion of the cube, use this MDX here simply to say, just go and extract the sales from the parallel period of 1 year back. All right, so I copy this, switch back, paste that into my script, and deploy. So just be aware, that doesn't mean there's any data stored in this table. And yet, when that deploys and I switch across to the browser, and let me do this, I'll just reconnect, and I will say for the year that is 2011-2012, for the product that is vanilla, go ahead and show me the months and the sales and the budget. And magically, we will see that the budget values for fiscal year 12 are exactly what the previous years were. Now, this isn't a desirable way of doing things, all right? If you're familiar with these scoped assignments, what you'll appreciate is that that data isn't actually being stored anywhere. We're just artificially overriding the values in cells by saying, just take the previous year. Now, also, how do you think that would excite your salespeople? Oh, all I have to do is get the same as last year. It's not terribly motivational. All right, so we'll leave that for the vanilla product. Moving on to strawberry then, perhaps a better approach if you want to take that approach of just repeating history into the future is that what I could do here is just insert into my sales budget fact table, and this is a select statement that just reaches for the previous year for product 2, which is strawberry, and multiplies by some factor like 1.1. So this is your classic, next year's sales need to be 10% improvement on the previous year sort of thing. So all I'm doing is populating that table with that data, and then I can come into my cube here and its targets measure group and process it. And if I switch this across to strawberry, you get to see that 10% increase on 212 is actually 233. So in my thinking, this is an improvement because at least we have the data stored in a fact table. It is real data. And we could choose to manipulate it one way or another, and then it would just surface through the data model. Okay. Another approach then is if we take a look at chocolate. Now, for chocolate, I wanted to do something a little bit special, and that's where I want to bring data mining in. Because I recognize that there is a pattern, a seasonal pattern that has taken place for the past 3 years of our history, and I want to learn from that pattern and then just use that to create the planning values for the next fiscal year. All right. So the first step in this is to go ahead, and I have a statement here to create a view, my sales by product, that basically pivots So with these correlated subqueries, it's placing the products on the columns. So when I execute this, it's now part of the data warehouse definition. And then I'll go ahead and create a new data source view in my multidimensional project. And so this is my time series sales. And if we take a look at this view and explore it, there we see all of the history, chronologically by month, but with each product on the columns. So this will become the input for our data mining model. So in the same project, I define a mining structure using the time series algorithm and my new data source view. And basically, the month key is the key, but each product is an input. And it's also predictable. There's a unique capability of Microsoft's time series algorithm, and that is it supports cross-prediction, which is pretty important here, because I would expect that if vanilla sales go down, it's quite possible that you may have an inverse, that chocolate goes up, or the substitution of one product for another, and it will actually detect patterns between the series themselves. And this is a great unique capability, only available with the Enterprise Edition. So I'll give this a name. Sales budget. So it creates the structure that consists of a single model. I'm going to tweak the model with its parameters. The forecasting method, there's actually two methods inherently used and by default for this algorithm. I'm asking it just to use the autoregression with cross-prediction. And also, very important for this algorithm is you specify the periodicity. In other words, how many rows per cycle? And because this is monthly data and we know that it's seasonal per year, there are 12 rows. So it's very important that you provide that hint to the engine so it starts to look for patterns within each 12 rows. And now that I've optimized it, I'll go ahead and deploy. And its job then is to go ahead and seek out those patterns. We'll take a look with the viewer. And so this is pretty much what it looks like. And we'll focus just on the chocolate. I'll increase this for the next 12 months. And this is pretty much the projection of where it's likely to go. And you can see this gradual increase over time as our products are becoming more popular. In fact, if I switch across to this second visualization for chocolate, I mean, internally it uses a decision tree, but what you get to see is the true formula. The way that it computes each extra step within the future is this formula here. And see the way that it requires double chocolate 24 periods ago. Notice there's a pattern there, that whatever happened 2 years ago for double chocolate will impact the current time period. The last tab within the designer allows me to go ahead and create a query. So using a prediction function, I will use predict time series for chocolate. Go ahead, give me the next 12 steps. And there they are. So the power of analysis services data mining to help seed the future values that we have for our KPIs. Now, one final tweak here, if I switch across to the query, is that I need to flatten it. And by flattening it, it just becomes an ordinary data set, like a result from a relational query. So where I head with this, then, is that to get this into my fact table, I have an integration services package. So this is specifically for executing this query and taking that data and loading it into my fact table. First of all, just point out that we are driven by a variable, so which fiscal year goes ahead and deletes the current ones. It then uses a data flow to go ahead and connect to the analysis services database, and you'll see that exact same query right here. And that pulls in the next 12 according to the current model. This script component generates the correct month key. So according to my variable, the first one will be 2012-07 for July, 08 and so on. Next, the product key is just the constant 3 for chocolate, and then it loads that result into the fact table. So we'll go ahead and execute this. And there we see 12 rows have been retrieved and loaded into the fact table. And then on success of all of this, it's processed my target's partition. So the cube will surface these results straight away for me. Okay, so now when I go ahead and switch back to the cube, and we switch across to chocolate. I'm not sure why I have to reconnect for that. Oh, because I redeployed. We now see that those planning results, or the planning values for 2012, are based on the data mining. So the next thing is, you say, well, that's all very well, but what if we don't accept that it's 719? It really should be close to that, but we're going to say 730. How can we interact and modify that value? Well, the fact is the product supports a really cool feature. I think it's often overlooked, and that is we can go ahead and write enable partitions. So most of the time, the cubes that we develop are read-only experiences. With the Enterprise Edition, you can go ahead and create partitions that use write-back, and then you may use your own tool or Excel 2010, which supports native ability through a pivot table to write back into the cells of your cube. So let me go ahead and deploy. Now what that will do is create a write-back relational table in the data source. So with that deployment having succeeded, let me show you that in my data warehouse, we actually have a write table here for all of those written values. And it should be no surprise that if I query it, there's actually no data there. But what we will see is there is a column for the measure of sales budget, the product key and month key, that is the dimensionality of the measure group that this partition is based on, is here, and then the when and who. So there's complete audit trail. Now, of course, you're only going to grant permission, and that's write permission, for those that actually need to go ahead and contribute or revise values that are in the cube. So don't think that general users can come in here and modify things. You can control right down to the individual cell who can write or read from that cell. So with that all set up, I switch back to my Frosty Ice Cream workbook, and then here in the write back worksheet, I go ahead and I insert a new pivot table based on my sales analysis database. So what I'm going to do is take the product and place them on the columns. We'll go ahead and put the fiscal hierarchy on the rows. I'm interested in sales budget. And if I go ahead and expand this to the month level, there's my scoped assignment. There's the 10% increase values that I took and inserted directly into the fact table. And there's the data mining results that I inserted as well. And so we might go and say, well, look, this really should be 150. It's all very well that we want the same as last year, but we know there's changing conditions ahead. And so the attempt to go ahead and modify that instantly comes back with this warning to say, well, a pivot table is read-only. And this is correct up until such time, and here I am on the options ribbon for the pivot table tools, up until such time that I enable what-if analysis. Now, the second thing I like to do there is automatically calculate changes so they're reflected immediately in the pivot table here. And then I can go ahead and write values into the cells. And you might say, well, hold on, didn't you just enter 150 and the answer is still 156? Well, the fact is that that scoped assignment is always going to override. It's always going to be the same value for 12 months earlier. All right, so there's just more reason not to use that approach to go ahead and produce planning values based on a scoped assignment. And yet if I come here and say that this 277 really should be 300, yes, it does take it. It has incremented that value. Now, be aware that it's working at session level at this point. It's not until I actually go ahead and commit them by publishing those changes that the write-back takes place, and then other users that query that data will see the results that I have here. Now, what's very cool is I could come in here also and say, well, at quarter level, we need to achieve 2100. And by default, that will equally allocate to the months beneath it, so each will get 700. And then you might question, well, where's our double chocolate gone? Well, the fact is, pivot tables don't show you rows or columns that are completely empty. So when I change the options for the pivot table here and say, show me empty columns, well, our double chocolate comes up. And then I could do the same thing at year level here and suggest that we must achieve 7,000 in sales, therefore the equal allocation is 583 per month. And yet we understand that our sales are seasonal, so it doesn't really make sense to equally allocate that down through each month. So I'll just do a control Z to undo that. One of the really cool things about the write-back is the ability to modify the settings, and I'm going to go ahead and use a weighted allocation. Now, this is one of the rare times that this information worker product requires that you know something about MDX, and you really do need to know your MDX at this point if you're going to work with this type of capability. So what I have here is an MDX expression that creates the ratio of the previous sales actual for double chocolate and divides it by the total for the year. So what we're essentially doing is created a weighted allocation that says according to the proportion sold per month in the previous year, you can allocate the new amount using that ratio. For example, if July is double December, well then that will flow through. So I copy this, paste it in, and this time when I allocate the 7,000, you see that it does add up, but we're getting the same distribution ratio-wise according to the prior year. And at this point, I can go ahead and write this back, and they're now permanently committed and available to anyone querying my cube. So it's of interest to note then when I re-query the write-back table, look what's been written back. The incremental changes for vanilla, that change from 156 to 150 is really the addition of minus 6. So what it's doing is taking the facts and it's aggregating them with the write-back values that I have here. So typically what will happen is, I think this is a great approach to, first of all, seed your planning values. Use approaches like I did with strawberry, chocolate, double chocolate, and then allow users that have the privileges and the authority and responsibility to come in and use a tool like this and tweak it, get it to just right, publish those changes. And at such point that you're ready to approve and to commit this as next year's budget, you want to then shift the values in this table into the actual fact table. And this is how I would achieve it. So in this script here, within a transaction, I'm going to use a merge statement. The merge statement is acting on a common table expression. So make sure you aggregate everything that's in that write-back table because there could be multiple rows per cell. So we're going to aggregate and group by month and product and get the sum of the sales budget. And then if there's an existing record in the fact table, then simply increment it. Otherwise, go ahead and insert a whole new value. And then you can go ahead within the same transaction and delete what is in the write-back table. Okay, so just to make that clear, if I re-query the write-back table, we have no data there anymore. And then all I would need to do is come in and just reprocess this partition. And what that means now, thank you. It just went ahead and reset my query. If we take a look for fiscal year 2012 and for double chocolate, by month, there's our sales, and there is the sales budget. So that's what the write-back did. So the last step in getting ready to define some KPIs is that I have some actual data. Let's just assume we're jumping 12 months into the future. Our sales have all happened, so these are the insertion of the actuals for 2012, and then I can go ahead and process my sales measure group. And there we go. And that's pretty much a cycle that you might take a look at. I'm not suggesting this is the way you have to do it. I'm letting you know what you can achieve with Alpha Services. Are there any questions at this stage? All right, part two. Have a question in the back? Yes? How does the write back function work? So what is the mechanism, I think, is your question. So what happens is, let me just switch back, that when I write enabled the partition, you have the partition here that is your regular partition, and then this is bound to that relational table. So in fact, when you process the measure group, it is aggregating the two together. So analysis services, you will write to it, there's an update cube function that is supported, okay? When you use that write back, internally analysis services knows to write to the relational table, okay? And yet when you query the measure group, it will combine the values from both of these partitions. Okay, only supported in Enterprise Edition. There are some restrictions with it. You can only have measures that use the sum aggregate function, okay? But basically that's it. And then you have Excel 2010. You don't even need to buy a client application. We now see that pivot tables can support the write back directly. Okay, next step. Now that we have some data to work with, defining the key performance indicators themselves. So note that there are two approaches now. We have the multidimensional project for cubes and the tabular modeling, that is either the tabular project supported in SQL Server Data Tools or Power Pivot. So let's focus first of all on the multidimensional. So KPIs are defined as first class objects within the cube itself. The KPI really is a collection of four metrics, being value, goal, status, and trend. They are all defined using MDX, multidimensional expressions. Your value and goal are probably very straightforward. Your status and trend, however, are normalized expressions that should return a value between negative 1 and 1. In the case of a status, and what we call a tri-state status, it has three states, good, slightly bad, and bad, 1 maps to good. Negative 1 is bad, and 0 maps to slightly bad. And for trend, 1 is getting better. Negative 1 is getting worse, and 0 is no change since the previous period. Now, in addition to these four principal metrics, you can also define a parent KPI. So you can have a hierarchy of KPIs that aggregate up. You can therefore define the weighting that one KPI has against the other. You can associate them with measure groups, and you can also influence the time member that it uses. So let's take a look at this one. So you'll note that the fourth tab in the Cube Designer allows me to go ahead and define KPIs. So I'll come in here and I'll create this one as sales performance. It will be associated with my targets measure group, and the value simply comes from the sales measure, so I drag it across. My goal expression is just the sales budget, and then we come to define the status in terms of both the indicator and the expression. Now just be aware that Analysis Services does not deliver these images. It delivers the metadata in terms of text, that this is the type of status indicator that will be returned. And it's up to the client application to interpret that and then to use the appropriate library of images. Just so happens that Excel already understands all of these, and we'll see that shortly. So I like to use something that's really clean. For a tri-state indicator, we have shapes, green, yellow, or red. For the status expression, I need to use MDX to return 1, 0, or negative 1. So I have a snippet for this. So essentially, if the sales variance percent exceeds or equals 0, then it's great. Otherwise, if it exceeds minus 15%, then it's slightly bad. Everything else is bad. And then we come to the trend. And again, you have the selection of different indicators. I mean, the spaces are sort of cute, but generally I keep it to the arrows. And the expression here is something similar, although what we're doing is comparing the current sales variance percentage to a tuple here that is then looking at the previous member of the current member on the fiscal hierarchy. In other words, it's comparing that ratio to the previous time period. Okay, and then what follows under the additional properties is the ability to cosmetically displayed in a folder, associated with another KPI, an expression for its weight or the time member, and some text description that a client tool may surface. Now, there is an alternate way to define a KPI. It's not commonly used, but for completeness, in this demonstration, I'll show you that you can also do it directly through script. So first of all, to support this, I have a calculation that is going to allow me to determine what the goal is for the profit measure. So I create this measure named sales profit goal, and notice that the visibility is set to zero, which means client tools won't ever see it, but it can be used by other calculations. And what I'm doing, it's not necessarily a great practice, but I'm hard coding the goals for each product. Personally, I would prefer this sits in your data, but for this demonstration and the time I have, this will suffice. So I'm going to take that calculation and extend the cube definition with it. And then I'll extend that definition even further with this create KPI statement. So you'll see that it has a measure, which is its value. We then have our goal, status, the graphic, the trend, its graphic, and the associated measure group. And then I can deploy this, and now we have this definition of two definitions of key performance indicators in our data model. Now to test it, in the KPIs tab, I can switch across to the KPI browser. And you might notice that there's just the one KPI here, and the reason for that, I don't know. If you define a KPI in script, this designer doesn't know about it. But I'll be honest, it's an unusual thing to define it in script. In Analysis Services 2008, they introduced the APSC, the personalization extensions. So it is possible that when a user connects to your database, you can have some .NET code that runs that then adds extra features that might be appropriate. So you can have this dynamic logic, and therefore it was added to support the fact that some users might need a KPI and other users may not. And in your .NET logic, you could have added that KPI definition for whatever users is relevant. So for whatever reason, I don't know why, we're only going to see KPIs that were defined in the KPI tab. What you can do up here is filter by the different hierarchies that you have. So I'll come in here and say, let's filter by quarter one. Nah, let's go for quarter four of 2012. And let's take a look at the product, which is chocolate. So what we can see for this quarter was that we didn't meet expectation, but only slightly off target. Therefore, we have a status of zero. And we are actually getting worse than the previous quarter. So the variance is actually more off track. If we want to drill down a little bit, we can see that for April, we're actually well off track and getting worse compared to the month of March in fiscal year 2012. And yet if we then take a look at May, things were getting better, and we can see that with the trend here. And then by June, we're actually exceeding expectation for that month. But the aggregate of all of this for the entire month is that we're still just slightly off track. Okay, so that's the way that you can test the KPI here inside the window. That's defining key performance indicators in a multidimensional model, in other words, the cube. For tabular development, what is new in SQL Server 2012, both for Power Pivot and the new tabular project, is that KPIs can be defined in these models also. The actual metric is actually based on an existing measure. And the target metric is either another measure in the model or it's the actual measure you've based it on. They refer to that as the absolute value. You can then define status, but not using an expression. The best that you can do is define threshold boundaries. And there's no capability to define a trend. So unlike the multidimensional approach that supports value, goal, status, and trend, in the tabular, you have just value, goal, and status. All right, this is what the UI looks like, and I'm going to take you through that in a minute. Optionally, descriptions can be defined for the KPI and its metrics. Trend cannot be defined. The icon styles are fixed. And KPIs won't surface in PowerView, not in this release anyway. So it's one thing that you'll add them to a tabular model. If you intend to use PowerView, you won't see the KPIs in this release. So let's take a look at defining a tabular KPI. So what I have here in a second Excel workbook that I've named Sales Analysis is actually a Power Pivot workbook. It's exactly the same data. So I could produce the same model, but using a different technology. There are some features that I'm not going to get, however, that I've already demonstrated. Does anyone know what they are? See, this will be one of your considerations. Now that you've got choice when it comes to producing data models, we're talking corporate data models here. I could have done this in a tabular project, is that the first thing I'm suggesting to my customers is that before you make that choice, you understand your requirements. And when you understand your requirements, that will dictate the features that you need, and then you can determine what model type supports what feature. So for example, scoped assignments, only supported in multidimensional. So we couldn't achieve that vanilla approach, not that we really want to, in a tabular project. Anyone aware of something else that I've done that would not be supported in tabular? Hierarchies are supported in 2012, so no problem with those. Write back, thank you. So write back is not supported in tabular. So if we want that great capability to go ahead and revise or contribute planning values, we're not going to get that in tabular. You'd have to write your own application to get it into relational and then refresh the tabular model yourself. It's not the same concept. Okay, and then of course we've just learned that the KPI has something missing as well. It doesn't support trend. In addition, it doesn't support the hierarchy of KPIs like the multidimensional will. So if they're not a problem for you, it could well be that this data model was produced, in this case using Power Pivot. So I have exactly the same model. I then switch across to my targets table. And then what I'm going to do is create the sales performance KPI. So this involves me creating a measure. And I do that here in the what's referred to as the calculations area. So it's the name of the measure, colon, equals the DAX expression. And all I'm going to do is bring in that sales performance equals the sales measure. And this might seem a little odd, but I'll explain. And then I'll go ahead and I'll format this so it's a whole number. And I have zero decimal places. I take that measure and then I create a KPI from it. And here in the KPI window, you'll see the measure that it's based on. The two approaches that you have here is that you can define the target as another measure, which is actually the approach that I'll take here. So really what it's doing is it's taking my base measure as the numerator and it's dividing it by my target measure. So when you think about it, if the sales equals the sales budget, this will result in one. If the sales exceed the sales budget, we're going to get something that's greater than one. And if we don't meet that budget, it's going to be something less than one. So that then helps us understand, according to the thresholds that we have here, so be aware that we can go bad, slightly bad, good, or good, slightly bad, bad, depends what you're measuring. For example, if I'm measuring customer complaints, then the lower number is good. All right, if I'm measuring sales, then the higher number is good. So the default was actually the right selection. And then it's up to me to then say, well, what are these values? Well, this one's the easy one. If we meet expectation, in other words, we get 1 divided by 1, 100%, then it's green. My rule here is that if it's 85% or less, it's off track, but if it's above but less than 0, it's slightly off track. Here I can define the icon style, and then here under descriptions, you can provide text captions. And again, depending on the client tools, they can surface this typically as tooltips to provide guidance for those that are consuming and interpreting the definition that you have. And then when I commit that, what you'll see is this icon that says that this isn't just a measure. It has additional metrics and logic that are surfaced as a key performance indicator. And I think it's pretty cool when you switch across to diagram view. We now see that this table supports measures in addition to this key performance indicator. Any questions so far? It's all making sense, I guess. All right, I'm happy. So that's defining key performance indicators in both a cube and a tabular model. So the next thing is, well, how can we consume them? And it often helps to understand the tools that are going to consume a KPI before you define it. All right, so the choices that we have for Microsoft products include Excel, both with pivot tables and the freeform approach, my favorite approach, using the cube functions. We have reporting services, and the specific tool for performance monitoring is performance point services. So we're going to explore all three of them and how we can bind to the key performance indicators that I've just defined. So starting with Excel. Oh, and by the way, I'll share with you, one of the frustrations I have when I come in and I see key performance indicators defined is that the logic is often defined in the reporting layer. So I might go into the Excel spreadsheet, and the logic that says, oh, if it's less than zero but greater than 85%, is all stored in formulas in cells, or it's in the reporting services logic, or it's defined direct in performance point services. My preference, once again, the single version of the truth when it comes to definition is you define it once in the model and you just leverage it through the different experiences that we have like this. And the advantage, of course, is that if you need to modify that definition, you just modify it in one location, and the refresh of any of these reports will allow the current definition to flow straight through. I have a question over here. Right, so the question here is that I've said that you cannot create a trend metric as part of the KPI definition, which I stand by is correct. However, the workaround for it is possible, and that is you could define a standalone measure or perhaps another KPI, but you're not going to get a single KPI that's going to give you those four metrics together. And I'll point this out to you because you'll see in the power pivot field list, as opposed to the pivot table field list, you won't ever see the trend defined. Okay. So back on track, single version of the truth when it comes to our definition, and let's see through three different reporting experiences how we can report. So there's actually two approaches with Excel. Let's take a look at the pivot table first. So I'll show you this in two different ways. Here I have the Excel workbook that contains the embedded power pivot model. So all I do is I switch across and say create a pivot table in this worksheet of the workbook. Okay, and so what you'll see there is that we do have that KPI, but I don't see any trend metric, right? So it's not part of the definition. And yet, so what I can do is come in here and say, well, I just want to have a look at value, target, and status. And there it is. And so I typically come in here and rename these headers. So it's sales, it's budget, and it's status. And I like to make that centered. And then I can come in here and say, well, go ahead and show me by month. So what I'll do is I'll put, actually we'll put the fiscal hierarchy on rows. I will just keep the 2012 year, and then I can go ahead and expand that right down to the month level. So yes, tabular models do support hierarchies as of 2012. There we see it. Next, it might be useful to go ahead and place product in a slicer. So now we can take a look and say, well, what happened for chocolate? Do you see that very quickly before it actually resolves the values with the conditional formatting? You see the numbers and then they update with the icons. I'll show you how that works in a following up demonstration. So that's pretty straightforward. That's just a pivot table approach. We see that the key performance indicator is accessible direct through the power pivot field list here. Switching back to my frosty ice cream sales. So remember what I'm doing here is connecting direct to the multi-dimensional database. This is not tabular anymore. What I will do in this worksheet is go ahead and insert a pivot table using the pre-established workbook connection to that multi-dimensional database. And so things look very different here because the pivot table field list is expressing everything in terms of measure groups, KPIs, and here's both of the KPIs I've defined, but here we see our trend. So let's bring in value, goal, status, and trend. And again, I like to update these headings. Sales, budget, status, and trend. Providing some context. So for my date dimension, I'll go ahead and I'll place month down on the rows. Then, this is an often overlooked capability because you would have noticed before that we had the ability when it was Power Pivot to define slices. We have particular zones here in the field list, and people don't think that you can do this in regular pivot tables. In fact, you can. So switching back to this pivot table based on multidimensional, while I don't have the zones here, on the insert ribbon, we can insert slices. Now there's a bit of a trick. If the pivot table is not in focus and you go to create the slicer, you have to define the connection it's based on. If the pivot table is in focus, it will automatically know that it's using the same connection as the pivot table itself. So I can come in here and say, well, the year level of the fiscal hierarchy and product. And now I get two slices. So I just drag this one across. To save some space, I'll increase the columns to two. And now I have that ability to monitor by a particular fiscal year. So there's the 12 months of 2012, and to explore the different products. We have vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, double chocolate. In fact, we can even aggregate. What did both chocolates do? I'll aggregate them together, and it's still accurate. That's the pivot table approach. It's fast, it's easy, and I think you now fully appreciate that with that definition of the KPI already in the model, it's just a matter of tick, 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 and it's added to a report. However, when it comes to reporting from the BI somatic model, my favorite topic when it comes to Excel is the freeform approach by using the cube functions. And I'm just interested to see by a poll in this audience, just by show of hands, who knows about these cube functions? And so I would suggest that that's probably about a third of the audience. And hands still up if you actually use them. And it's probably half that third. So what surprises me is that these are a really cool way of producing reports, particularly when you have legacy reports. And that there's this certain frustration that I have this pivot table. It's fast and it's easy to use, but it's difficult to customize into exactly what I want. Well, the fact is that these cube functions that were introduced with Excel 2007, so take a look here, equals, cube, there they are. Cell by cell, you're able to retrieve members or values. And therefore, you can lay out whatever you want within the worksheet itself. You can actually bring in data from multiple different models. And then when you've introduced members and values, you can then use native Excel expressions to multiply values between different data stores. So it's very, very versatile. And you can produce some really cool-looking reports. You can make it look like it's not Excel. Turn off those grid lines. Turn off the grid lines and headings. And then when you publish this to SharePoint and you have Excel services, you can render these reports that cell by cell are bringing in values from your hierarchies and the intersection of those hierarchies. All right. So it never ceases to fail me what you can achieve with these. Particularly with the variable nature, and I'll demonstrate what I mean by that. So with this report, and I pre-started it, I have a title here, I have some filters here, and all they are just values in these worksheet cells here. Note that I provided a named range for each of these cells. So there's my year, there's my product, and then even the name of the KPI can be variable, and its named range is KPI. Sitting here in cell A7 looks like the word month. But that's actually just a caption that we see. There's actually an object in that cell that is a set of members retrieved from the multidimensional model. So this is how it works. Using the CubeSet function, using this workbook connection, just execute this MDX and see the variability there. Whatever the year value is that's retrieved from cell B3, introduce it. Retrieve all of the months at the month level beneath that fiscal year. And then the caption is the last part that's optional. That's what we see when we look at cell A7. So the reality is we have 12 members sitting in there. And then here in cell A8, I use the cube ranked member, again, with this workbook connection, and a fixed reference to that set that is stored in cell A7. And I'm just using the row function. Row of A1 returns 1. Row of A50 returns 50. Guess what? Row of A582 returns 582. The reason that I did this is I could just put that formula there and copy it down, and you'll see that that becomes row of A2, row of O3. So there's my 12 ranked members from within that set displayed here. Look what happens when I change this. 2011, they all update. For the total, you might be tempted to actually just do a sum of the column. I would suggest you don't do that. I actually just use the member that is the fiscal year. You don't know if there's some scoped assignment or some custom logic inside the model that does something different to aggregate at year level. It probably shouldn't, but don't make that assumption. Don't use Excel to add them. Actually retrieve that cell from the cube. So this is the starting point for the report. What I'm going to show you is, I'm going to refresh everything first. The reason for that is just to get all the metadata, since I redeployed my model with the KPI definitions. Here in the header, I'm going to go ahead and use the cube KPI member. The IntelliSense here is absolutely brilliant. So there it's telling me all the workbook connections. I press tab to introduce it, comma. What is the KPI name? Well, I could hard code it, but the fact is, in my named range, KPI is the name of the KPI. Comma, what do I want to retrieve? So note that it's 1 for value, 2 for goal, 3 for status, and 4 for trend. So I'll come in and I'll say 1, and then optionally, do we have a caption? Yes. Just put the value in there. So again, what looks like the text value is really the value of this KPI. And now I can copy this across, and we'll change this to become 2, and it's our goal. 3. Here's the status, and 4 is the trend. So the final piece to complete this report is to use the cube value function. And what the cube value function requires, again, is the workbook connection, and then as many filters as you need. Basically, what are all the members that you're slicing on? So the first one will be B7. We want the value of whatever KPI is stored in B5. And then what I'm going to do is just lock in 7, so I can copy this. And then we'll lock in the time period. So I'll lock in 8, or A. And then I want the product, which is variable because it's stored. I don't know why I put 2012 in there. I'll fix that. So I'll use the IntelliSense here to build up the unique name to that product. So instead of all, I'm just going to use this. Okay, so it is NA, but if I fix this up, it should be vanilla. We can see that for 2011, for the sales performance actual for vanilla, it's 142 in July. And so the rest is really easy. Just copy this across and copy this right down. But don't override my formatting, so it returns the borders. Okay, switch this back to 2012, and there's my values. Do you think that's cool? Seriously, I still think these cube functions are absolutely amazing. They've just saved me so much time. Whereas in the past, I remember for these, I used to have to somehow run a query that would dump into a relational table, and then I would report off it to get the format I wanted, because I could never write the MDX in exactly the right way to present. So the finishing touch for this is to actually format these values. So if I select this range on my home ribbon, I can come in and apply conditional formatting. I have icon sets here. So the bad news about this is, while the cube developer may have said that I want shapes for status, unfortunately, it's up to the information worker here to know that or choose their own. So when I apply that, what you'll see is it has updated the conditional formatting. We really need to understand what it's doing by managing that rule and editing it. So what we'll see is it's actually using percentile matching. This is not what I want. I know that if it's 1, that it's actually the green icon. If it's the number 0, it's this. If it's less than 0, it's red. And then only show the icon. And that essentially is what the pivot table is doing for us. It's interpreting the metadata that it retrieves from the query result, and it's formatting the cells using conditional formatting. For trend, I'll go ahead and just create a new rule direct. And that's just the matter of selecting an icon set. And then from here, choosing, same thing. 1, 0, and only show that icon. And there's the freeform approach. Okay, any questions about that? Can I drill through on that is the question. No, you can't. That's a capability of a pivot table. All right, so that is something that is lacking in the freeform approach. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. Any other questions? So the question is, from a pivot table, how can I get to the cube functions? Okay, so with this pivot table, what you can do is on the pivot table options under OLAP tools, you can convert this to formulas. So thank you for raising that. So for those that are new to cube functions, my suggestion is this. Instead of starting from scratch, use the pivot table to get your report as close as possible to what you need, and then come here, convert to formulas, and you'll see each cell that was that pivot table is now broken into either a cube member function or a cube value function. Note that it doesn't convert to the cube KPI member. It doesn't convert that way. All right. So, and then when you go to edit it, it actually shows you that, it does. Up here, no, it doesn't. See, it's using cube member, but there is actually the sales performance trend. There is a hidden measure, which is what the KPI uses. So it's not precise as I'd like it, but nonetheless, it does the same thing. It's also interesting to point out that the slices can be passed into the cube member functions or cube value functions as well. So that is the unique name of the product slicer. That is the unique name of the year slicer. And we can see that by right-clicking the slicer and looking at the settings. That is the name here that you use in formulas. Just pass them into the cube value, and it will filter by their selection. Can you repeat that?
There's an add-on for Excel that if you create a pivot table off of a view, it'll give you the MDX.
Oh, okay. So what's raised here is that there's an add-in that will allow you to see the MDX that the pivot table is firing off. Yes. One other thing to point about the free form is a problem that you could have is that it won't be a problem here for years because we know there's always 12 months. But if you had geographic regions, like state, and you wanted to see the cities under the state, a pivot table will expand, collapse according to the number of cities. It's dynamic in size. The freeform is fixed. So if you create this report to have 10 cities beneath a state, and yet somehow in the future you have a customer that comes from an 11th city, you won't ever see it. And that is a problem with this approach. So there is a downside to the freeform. So this really only applies to reports that you know have a rigid size. So months within a year is a classic example. The last thing I wanted to point out here is, just by changing the name of the KPI, just works, all right? Even the formatting flows through. So these cube values actually honor the formatting that has been applied within the data model itself. It's very, very cool. So what I could do is publish this to SharePoint. I could then embed this into a SharePoint dashboard page by using the Excel Web Access web part, and then I could have some type of filter that would prompt the user for what KPI do they want to report on. So this minimizes the number of reports or dashboards you need by allowing them to actually select the KPI, and you can see how that works dynamically in this example. All right, so that's Excel. So I've provided you some information here about the cube KPI member and the different properties that you have and the strength of publishing these. Let me just point you out to that because I like to show what happens when you turn off grid lines and headings because it doesn't even look like Excel anymore. All right, so this is an alternative reporting environment. Another question here. So are there any other add-ins? Is that your question?
No,
these cube functions. Okay, this will work in tabular as well. So I think your question is, so the beauty about this is, providing that your tabular model is in in-memory mode, it's not using direct query, then you may query it using MDX. In fact, when you connect via a pivot table to a tabular model, it thinks it's multidimensional. It doesn't know. All right, so the fact is you can use the MDX KPI functions, which is what Excel is doing. It doesn't understand its tabular. So it will deliver the correct and consistent result. Okay, next we're moving on to reporting services. So reporting services is a richer environment. It provides, I guess, better graphics. We see that we have gauges. If you attended Bob Meyer's session this afternoon, you would have seen that there's some really cool things you can do with things like sparklines, data bars, indicators. But of particular relevance when representing key performance indicators are two visualizations in reporting services. And they would be the indicator, which was introduced in 2008, and the gauge. So let's switch straight across to a demonstration on this. I'm using Report Builder. And I've pretty much already prepared the report in the sense that it's got a title and a table and a data source that connects to my multidimensional model. So all I'm going to do is add a data set based on that data source and the query designer. And so just to be clear here too, to follow up from the previous question, if I was connecting to a tabular database, I would have exactly the same query designer that would generate MDX and that would work against its KPIs. So what I'm going to do here from my date is I'm going to filter, and I like to maximize this window because when I filter by, you know, 2012 quarter one, this little checkbox is so helpful. You see, when this is minimized or when it's not maximized, you'll see that's hidden. A lot of people don't see at first that that's available. And simply by checking this checkbox, that will create a report parameter. It will create a hidden data set that will retrieve the members and make them an available list through a dropdown. All right, so users on this report can go ahead and filter by a quarter. It will default to quarter one of 2012. And then what I'm going to do is bring in a product, and then I'm going to bring in my KPIs. Just drag them in. So it automatically brings in the four metrics, or you can introduce the individual metrics if you want. And then in addition, I'm going to bring in sales variance and sales variance percent. All right, and you can see instantly the values that we have. Now, when we take a look at the fields, I like to clean these up a bit. I'm not sure why it puts extra underscores in here. And the percent symbol is not supported in identifiers in reporting services, so I'm going to spell that out as percent. And so now I have this data set that brings in by product all of my KPI metrics and some additional calculations. And so then I come in here and I say put the product there on the insert. I'll go ahead and insert an indicator into here. And again, it doesn't read the metadata that understands which indicator type it should use. So it's up to you to select it. And then here I'm going to specify that this will be the performance status. Okay, now when I edit the indicator, you can see that it's using that calculation, and I need to specify that it's a number. Remember that it's going to return 1, 0, or negative 1. So it's a number, and then I create the rule here that if it's between negative 1 and negative 1, it's this color and this icon. If it's between 0 and 0, it's this one. If it's between 1 and 1, it's this one. Now, to convey some extra information, I'm a big fan of the tooltip. So I use an expression here that is going to create text so that when you hover over the indicator, it provides more information about it. Okay, just be aware that's only going to work when rendering in HTML. And that's one way to express the key performance indicator, just using the indicator in reporting services. Now, the other approach is the gauge. And I'll use a linear gauge here to convey profitability. So when I select the gauge's pointer, I'm going to specify that it will use the profit value. And I'll edit this because remember it's a percentage. I'll go ahead and multiply it by 100. So if it's 5%, instead of representing 0.05, it's going to be the number 5. I'll update the scale. And it'd be disastrous if profit was less than negative 20%, and we don't expect anything above 20%, and the interval of 5 works for this report. And then finally, to convey status, we can add ranges. So there's a range, and then when I come to its properties, I come in and specify, well, the lowest point is negative 20, but the highest point is actually variable. Do you remember my MDX that had said that if profit for vanilla was this, strawberry was this? And so what I'm going to do is say that that range's upper limit is actually equal to whatever the goal is multiplied by 100. So if it's 0.15, it's going to represent it as 15 on this scale. Then we go ahead and run. So now for a particular quarter, and this being the first quarter of 2012, we get to see a list of products, and now we can compare those two metrics. Are we meeting target in terms of sales, and are we maintaining profitability? Remember, this solves that problem of undesirable behavior because we just had one of those KPIs. And here we see it, vanilla, on track. Tooltip tells me a little more, and we see that profit is slightly above the bad zone. Double chocolate's in trouble, slightly off track as far as the volume of sales, and profit is well off track. All right, and then users have that ability to toggle between the different time periods. What happened for the next quarter? Okay, strawberry picked up. Very effective monitoring. All right, I've got about 4 minutes to finish up on the last topic, which is just about enough time, and that is Performance Point Services. This is a product that specializes in delivering monitoring and analysis solutions. Now, you can define KPIs directly in this product. You can also leverage the KPIs you already have defined inside your data models. So what I have here in Dashboard Designer is a pre-built solution, but we don't have the KPI or a scorecard yet. The approach that is supported is that when you create a scorecard based on analysis services, you can go ahead and define the connection and choose this option to import from existing KPIs. However, in this release, for whatever reason, the provider is slightly different and Performance Point Services hasn't kept sync with it. So you're going to get this error. And if you look in the event log, it will actually tell you the assembly it's looking for is the one that was the previous version. In other words, Analysis Services 2008 R2. I have logged this bug. I would expect it would be fixed another time. But it does provide me the opportunity to show you what that wizard would really be doing. And if I go ahead and create a blank KPI, you see the default of a single metric for actual and one for target. Then I come in here and I provide a name for it, sales performance. And here for its actual, instead of a fixed value of 1, I'll use that data source and I'll use an MDX formula. Now there's an MDX function called KPI value. And then by name, look up the sales performance. So there's no copying of logic here. We are binding to a definition in the model that could change later on, but we don't need to modify this project. I can format that to become numeric. And then likewise for the target, instead of a fixed value, we change the source across to analysis services and use this formula, but this time not the value, but I think you guessed it, the goal. Now, for non-actual metrics, you need to specify the thresholds. So when we set the scoring pattern, you could get Performance Point Services to work out the score and map it to the different bands. But this is what this third option is about. Sorry, this one. Band by stated score. In other words, it's your data source that is telling you. It's determining. And the way it does that is that you first of all select your icon and then you map. And this time I map to the KPI status. So when it executes this, it's going to return 1, 0, or negative 1. And we just tell it that 1 maps to this band and 0 maps to this band. There's a problem with the repainting here. So when I select another metric and come back, you'll now see 1 is green, Zero is this, worst is negative one. So the last part about this is to put this into a scorecard. So this time I create a blank scorecard. And I'm going to call this sales scorecard. And then I can bring in my KPI, update. So it's actually retrieving live data at this stage. Be careful not to interpret what it has to tell you because we're not filtering on a time period yet. So you shouldn't be comparing them at this stage. If I modify the metric settings, I just want to remove the variance. So all I see is actual target, and I probably want to see that formatted a little better. So I just update the KPI's target format. Switch back, update again, and then I want to see this in terms of my products. So I drag product in, and I tell it to dynamically place all products under there. And there's my scorecard. So then I can come to my dashboard, which has been pre-built. It's using a quarter filter. I come in and I take the scorecard, drag it into the left column, and then I say that whatever the filter value is that's selected, filter the scorecard by it. And I'm going to do this, it's a little different. Because you're selecting a quarter, whatever quarter has been selected, unique name, dot children. So what it's going to do is navigate the hierarchy. Whatever quarter you select, it will put the children, in other words, the months of the quarter across the columns. And then in addition, whatever product you select that's on the rows, go and filter the report. And I know I'm just jumping a little ahead there, but you can follow through with Performance Point Services. What's important is that when I deploy this, you get to see that that KPI definition is being used consistently in this experience within a scorecard. All right, let's switch across to the year in focus. So the first quarter of 2012, and there we see our products. There we see the actual target and the status. And if I need to explore this, I select double chocolate. There's the details for double chocolate. I would ask you to explore this in Performance Point Services, but this is the thing. Monitoring is great for telling you what is happening. When you isolate that there is a product problem, you want to understand why, and that's why we want reports that allow you to explore and understand root cause. What about trend? If I had time, I would show you that trend would be a third metric of that KPI, and I would just say band by stated score, and I would connect to the KPI trend function. All right. So just to recap, I think what we've covered here is that you see that you can define KPIs in your models, but beyond that, when it comes to the target values that your KPIs will need, you've got various techniques for collecting, storing, managing those values within the data models. Beyond that, once you have this single version of a KPI, you have Excel, reporting services, and performance point services to help consistently surface your KPIs for monitoring. So from a related content point of view, I'll leave this for you, but you do have some great hands-on labs that will explore creating models, tabular and multidimensional, some breakout sessions that will go into more detail about creating richer data models, be them multidimensional or tabular, track resources, heaps of resources, so I've already talked about the hands-on labs, the eval copy of SQL Server 2012, and then the standard resources that you'll have all week. All right, very much appreciate that if you could submit an evaluation, it's great to hear what you have to say. If it worked for you, great, we'd love to hear that. If there's any way that we can improve this, we'd love to hear that from you as well. Otherwise, thank you very much for the attention and your time, and I hope this proves to be of value to you. Thank you.